Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen, and I hope you find value from my conversation today. And if you do, I would greatly appreciate it if you would take just a couple moments of your time to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That helps others just like yourselves find out about the podcast and helps me continue growing as a podcaster and developing more and more interesting and informative content for you. Today, I'm excited to welcome Amber Trueblood to the podcast. And yes, that is her real name. And yes, it is the coolest last name I have ever heard. Amber and I met through Christy Holt, who you may remember from episode 59. And Christy has been so incredibly generous when it comes to referring women who she highly respects to the podcast. And over the next several weeks, you will hear from many of those women, all of whom I highly respect. So be on the lookout for those episodes. I've been so excited to talk with Amber, above all else, because she and I share a true love for books. And we talk about many, many books that have changed our lives throughout this episode. So please be sure to check out the show notes for all of those. Amber is also a podcast host. She hosts Stretch Marks, the podcast, and we decided to do a collaboration episode in which this episode will be coming out on the Mosaic Life podcast, as well as Stretch Marks, the podcast. So hopefully both of our listener bases have the opportunity to discover something new. So Amber Trueblood is an author, a retreat host, and the mother of 4 sons. She's an unapologetic bibliophile, having devoured over 250 books on behavior, management, systems, parenting, meditation, and self-development. Her expertise, experience, compassion, and humor result in a unique combination of entertainment and effectiveness with her clients. Interestingly, Amber wrote Stretch Marks, her debut book, while on a Broadway tour with her husband and 4 sons, traversing over 60 cities across the US and Canada. Amber is most passionate about providing mothers simple and realistic tools to guide them toward a happier, calmer parenting life. Her unique approach includes helping clients clarify their values and priorities, then showing them how to use that knowledge to make better disciplined decisions, relieve mom guilt, reduce self-judgment, and become a truly enlightened parent. Amber is awesome and exceptionally friendly. I highly encourage you to connect with her, especially if you're a parent. With all that said, please welcome my guest today, the wonderful Amber Trueblood.
Hey, Trey. We can both thank each other for being here today.
Yes, we can. How's it going, Amber?
It's going well. I mean, well, with the caveat, right? Everybody has that right now. Like, things are good. And then, you know, and then the real answer comes afterwards.
You know, I always feel, I don't know if bad is the right word, because, you know, this year has obviously been difficult for a lot of people, but it's been actually pretty good for me. My business has grown. I've grown as a human being. I've learned to become more introspective, appreciate the things that I have, not necessarily the things that I want, not need. So, you know, my heart obviously goes out to everybody who's suffered a lot this year, whether that's in regard to health or even, you know, job loss. But for me, I've been fairly happy.
Yeah, I think that's such an important distinction, and like allowing yourself to be happy. And also by saying that, like, you're giving those other people out there a chance to be like, okay, I was embarrassed too, but like really happy too with this, or we're really it's okay to compartmentalize it too. Like, be like, I've been really happy with this part of it. And these are the gifts I've found over here. Like, this part has been tricky. But I was talking about that with a couple friends that I saw last weekend. And I have still, we've still been completely social distancing in our family. And really, like, I've not been to Target or a restaurant or a coffee house or anywhere. I've been nowhere. Yeah. I've been to FedEx twice. which wasn't really super fun.
Right.
But I was talking to them and I said, you know, it's really amazing because when you have a small pocket of people that you can spend time with, you become really clear on, I mean, at least that's what's happened for me, on who I want to spend that time with.
Yeah.
And like, what an amazing gift that is.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. You know, and I do want to make one more point. You know, just because you're happy, that doesn't diminish the suffering of other people. I mean, you know, just because you're happy doesn't mean you need to feel bad for others who are going through things. I mean, if you want to be helpful toward them, you can lend your resources, but, you know, just feeling guilty for the sake of feeling guilty doesn't help anybody.
Yeah. My friend Amy says, and I think she took a famous quote and pushed it one step further, or it might, now I'm not going to have the name of this quote, but you might know the name. She says, you know, serve from your saucer, meaning like fill your cup so full that you can serve from the overload. And like, that's such a nice way to see it. Like, you can give and give and give, but if you're not filling up your cup, like, then you can't give. So if you're happy, then awesome. You're coming from a place where you can really reach out and support other people around you. And like, don't we need more of that? Or do we need more like, no, you should be miserable because I'm miserable.
Do we need more us against them, infighting, who's to blame for what? I know.
Right.
That adds so much more complication to what 2020 has been.
One of when you were first talking, I wrote down hindsight window. So Eric Edmeads.
No,
he's a speaker. And one of my favorite stories of his is called the hindsight window. And he says that, you know, from any times of transition or difficulty or challenges to the point at which in the future you look back and say, oh my gosh, like if that hadn't happened, if that breakup hadn't happened, I wouldn't have met this person, or if that job wouldn't have happened, or blah, 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 you know, I wouldn't have. So, you know, that hindsight is 2020. He said the real magic to happiness is closing that hindsight window gap. Like it takes you 20 years to find, you know, to find the gifts in something bad. This could be a lot of years of like resentment and frustration and anger and like all the impact that has on your life. Right. And you physically too. Right. But if you, the sooner you can get to that point where you can see the gifts, the smaller you can make that hindsight window, the better. And I was like, oh, I love that.
I love it too. I mean, we really can't control every action that we take has an equal or opposite reaction moving into the future. So you can't dwell on one moment in your past and try to prophesize what may or may not have happened. You'll drive yourself crazy. And so as long as you can take where you are right now and set aim for where you'd like to be in the future, then you can make more informed decisions in the present.
Well, I would say you can do that. A lot of people do. That doesn't make them happy.
I know.
Continue to do that.
Yeah.
But ask yourself, like, is that working for me? And then it's like, well, how do I get out of that? If that's my pattern, you know, some of the other people will say like, you haven't, you know, have you, if you keep reliving the same challenge, like then it's just, you haven't learned the lesson yet, you know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's if you find yourself saying like, why does this always happen to me? You know, then ask like, okay, what did I not learn the last dang time this happened to me? What did I miss?
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that leads into, you and I have had a couple conversations now ahead of time, it leads into stoicism because, you know, we have control over how we process emotions, how we process, you know, the influences are in our own lives, and that's it. We can't process what happens externally. And so if you're always blaming your situation, or if you're blaming others for your situation, then you're never going to grow. You're never going to become a person who you can look back on and say, I was proud at that point in my life of who I was. And that's where I was probably four or five years ago. I always thought that everybody, all of my misery, all of my anxiety, all of the bad crap that is going on in my life was, of course, it's not my fault. Why would it be my fault? That seems absurd. I know everything. I am fully capable of everything about my life. And just, that was not the case. And it was a very harsh reality when I learned that.
Okay. So this is my question then. Was it, because I know, and the listeners will know this about both of us soon, that like we're both obsessed with books and we are, you know, we grow from books and we love books. So
yes.
was it that one, like, was it kind of a final string, like a final epiphany that like opened the light, or was it like more arduous than that?
Let me see if I can answer the question with an anecdote. So I, if we are on video today, so I am wearing an Oura ring. It's a ring that measures your biometrics. And the only reason I bring that up is because 5 years ago, it was a relatively small community, and they asked their users, or their, I guess, the people who wear the rings, to, you know, share your story with us. Let us know what your life is like, you know, what you're trying to pursue, how you're trying to improve your life with this ring. So I'm like, all right, I'll do this. So I wrote this, you know, long article, you know, about all these things that I'm in the process of accomplishing and all these, you know, big changes I've made in my life. And I was super proud of the article, and it was received well by their Instagram community. I'm like, all right, cool. This is awesome. At that same time, I read Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday, which I've mentioned to you. And I realized that 99% of everything I wrote in that article was based on my ego. It was, I want people to know these are the things that I'm going to be doing in the future. These are not the things that I have done. These are not the things that I'm currently doing. These are the things that I have started to think about and started to pursue, and they're going to make me amazing. And I kind of have gone back and read that article a couple of times, and I cringed to an extent because I knew where my headspace was at that moment in time. And that book was that pivotal moment in my life where I realized, okay, things need to change for me. They need to change how I operate. I need to update my operating system so I can become the person I actually truly want to be.
Wow. And so then was it a matter of tactics? Like when you said that, the first thing that came to mind, and of course, when you talk about, like, you know, ego and blaming others and, you know, nothing bad that happens ever had any, you know, that you weren't taking responsibility for your part in any of it.
Right.
I think probably like other people who are listening, I immediately, there are people in my life that come to mind that I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. So what did you do? Because I want so badly for them to see the light that you've seen, which of course we can't do that work for other people.
Right.
But I also was thinking, because some of the people that I have in mind, I see that it's them attempting to parent themselves, to kind of act as the parent that they wish they had, you know, where you have this acknowledging, like, you know, what's the word? Just like unconditional love and support of, like, you got this, like you are loved, you are enough, you are this, like, and so then they spend the rest of their life doing it, convincing other people, like, I am great, like, you don't even know yet what I can do, like, I am badass, and everybody's like, chill, I wasn't worried that you weren't, like, but there's, it's this void that they're filling because they hadn't filled it previously. And one of the things I do a lot in my meditations is, like, we'll do like a child, you know, like a meditation where you interact with yourself as a child and try to provide that which you didn't have. Was that at all like part of the journey?
It may have been. And I guess to your point, to an extent, one of the things, or a couple of the things you said. So fun fact about me, one of the first jobs I had out of college, I think it was actually the second job, I worked for a small business. It was a matchmaking company where we had clients who wanted to meet and date and fall in love. And so I learned a lot in that role. And, you know, one of the biggest takeaways that still sticks with me is when somebody gets out of a relationship, what they tell you they want is everything they didn't have in the prior relationship. If your previous partner was short, you want somebody who's tall. If somebody was soft-spoken, you want somebody who's outspoken, because you think that, oh, that person didn't work, so I need the complete opposite. And I can't remember the point I was trying to make with that, but to your point, we want things that we never had. And I don't know. I'm sorry. What?
We're talking about like parents, you know, that I feel like a lot of people who can't see their own responsibility in something or are struggling with that, feeling like they've been wronged, you know, like, oh, I've been the victim. Like, this is not fair. You know, just somebody give me a chance to show. And that I feel like sometimes that comes from the fact that they didn't have a strong, you know, guardians or parent figures that were providing that kind of unconditional love and support. So it's scary to be out there on your own.
I see what you're saying. And, you know, for me, that it wasn't a case of not having the support system that I needed. It wasn't the case of not having the resources. I grew up, my parents were always very supportive, even through some of my more stupid decisions, like trying to be a model or an actor. And they always, you know, said, you know, put your best foot forward and pursue what you can or what you're able to do. And so my dad was always very successful in his career. So it's not like I didn't have the resources, just I was not willing to allocate the effort to pursue the things that I wanted. I was always under the assumption that one day I was going to wake up and all of the hard work would be behind me. I would be a best-selling author. I'd be a podcast garnering millions of downloads per episode. And just, it wasn't until I understood how to have a symbiotic relationship with my ego that I realized that I need to actually do the work and put in the work to, you know, accomplish the goals that I've always wanted.
Got it. So what does a symbiotic relationship with your ego mean?
Well, a lot of people, I think, try to kill their ego, which is not the wrong, I mean, you can't, it's the wrong path to take. And so knowing that it exists and knowing, you know, how it flares up for me, you know, I think I mentioned to you, I quit drinking almost a year ago, actually. And drinking or alcohol is something that would help my ego just, you know, bubble to the surface and think that I've got everything that I need. I've got all these great resources I can do. I can take on the world. And so many times it was just talk. And so learning to operate with your ego in a way that you know what you're capable of, and it gives you the confidence to pursue what it is that you want to set out to accomplish, and not letting it take you so far as to make, I guess, a poor decision based on guesswork. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the best way to describe that, but in my own mind, that's how I operate with my ego. I don't feed it unnecessary, I guess, things that are going to output bad behavior.
So, because now your business is, and I say business, but your purpose is all about like understanding like the philosophy behind happiness, right?
I mean, right, right,
how,
yeah.
How do you describe it? Like,
yeah. So, the goal of the podcast is to, I guess, long-term develop an algorithm for happiness. And I would never claim to have all the answers. And actually, you and I met because of Christy Holt, who owns an incredible company who has developed tech around that. For me, there was a 1 or 2 year period where I was searching high and low for happiness in all of these different outlets that weren't attainable for me, or even if they were attainable, it was toxic. And so probably last August, September, I started to actually look inward and realize that I have the capacity within myself to actually be happy. And so I know that formula isn't the same for everybody. And that's why I call it an algorithm, because if X equals this, then Y is going to equal something else for everybody else. And so I'm trying to talk with people like yourself and people like Christy and, you know, even quote unquote normal people, as I call them, people who in certain circumstances have left their jobs because they've been so miserable. They want to pursue their own path forward, that we can start to understand where happiness actually stems from and why so many of us who are chasing it never attain it. Mm-hmm.
It made me, when you were talking about that, it made me think, and this is like so applicable right now to what's happening on the planet, is, you know, perspective. Like I think of, I have two friends and, well, I'm more than two friends, but I have two friends in this story and, that they're the lens through which they view the planet,
right,
are so polar opposite. You know, and for one who she, you know, they could both look at the same situation and one could see, you know, not just half full glass, like just, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. And she truly is feeling that, like it's not, it's so deeply embedded. And the other one, you know, is the polar opposite that way. And so, you know, I've watched people, you know, look at social media or, you know, following the election, but knowing that it's also driving them crazy and, you know, and, but feeling like, well, I have to be informed and, you know, and all of these expectations, but then it's making them miserable. And, you know, right now, especially with social media and all of the content that we can choose to spend our time on or not spend our time on, and all the beliefs associated with that are like impacting people's happiness in a huge way. And so I wonder about that. And I wonder like, okay, so yes, you want to be informed. What does that mean? Like, and at what cost? And how does that benefit you or your family or the community? And maybe you have great answers to that. I don't know.
I mean, I would certainly make the argument, and this is not the first time I've said this to you, that if you want to be informed, get off of social media. I mean, if you want to be informed, then go talk to somebody. In my case, and I'm not judging anybody, but if I want to be informed about the other's point of view, I'm going to go talk to somebody who's got a Trump sign in their front yard, because that's not who I'm voting for, but I want to understand why they are. And I think it was in... do I need to censor myself when it comes to book titles here?
No.
Okay.
No.
When it comes to Mindfuck by Christopher Wiley.
Not on my watch, at least.
Okay. Same. Okay.
Maybe Apple iTunes will ding me. I have no idea.
They're book titles,
everybody.
Yeah, they're book titles. So, you know, Christopher Wiley, he was one of the people who helped build Cambridge Analytica, which, long, long story short, is how they helped President Trump win the election, and it was done through Facebook data and data mining. I mean, there's no argument about it. That's how he won. And so they really dug into people's personalities, especially when it comes to their online behavior. And they came to realize that people's identities are attached to everything that people, like Trump, for example, attach their identities to the statements that Trump makes. And so when you attack the statements, they feel like they're attacking who they are as individuals, which is a huge, huge problem for us. And so if you want to actually get to know somebody, then actually have a conversation with them. Actually get unbiased, take away all the filters, take away all of the preconceived notions you have about somebody, and just get to understand why they feel the way that they do. Mm-hmm. That, in my opinion, is the best way to become informed. It's just, there's so much toxicity out there, especially on the internet. Very rarely have I ever seen, you know, people in person start to throw punches because they disagree with each other. It happens, obviously, but it doesn't happen nearly as often.
We were just lighter aside to this. We were rewatching that. There's a sitcom called The Good Place.
Oh, yes, I love that show.
So my husband had not seen it before, and I haven't seen it for years. So we've been watching that, and And there was a part where it said, you know, it was some sort of, you'll never hear humans say. And one of them was like, on social media, they say, wow, you've really changed my opinion on that.
Yes. Yes. I agree.
So I like to understand. And that's why I think watching Social Dilemma was so enlightening for me, because instead of making me upset, it really helped me have more compassion and understand why so many of us have come to such polar opinions about things, and in such a heated and inflamed and personal, like to your point, you know, taking it very personally, whether somebody chooses to, you know, vote a certain way or wear a mask or not wear a mask, or, you know, that it's people, you know, at least from what we've seen, you know, there are many that are taking personal affront to the decisions of others.
Right.
And now granted, anyway, so that was really exciting for me to understand, wow, like, and that's because much of that is because what we're, the information, right, quote unquote, that people are getting, that they're banking on as truth,
right,
is totally different depending on what these magical computers think you're more likely to engage with.
Right.
And, you know, I always in the back of my mind, like, look, guys, like, think about this. Like, Facebook is a company. They're, you know, like, if they're going to give you more, like, I always think of this with the universe when I think about, like, manifesting and visualization. Like, I use Facebook algorithm as like an example. Like, look, if you spend a lot of time commenting, talking about stuff that you don't like,
right,
the universe says, oh, this person wants more of that, because that's what they are attending to. And so I always made that kind of, like, tried to make that connection, but I had no idea, like, how much deeper it really goes than just how many likes and how many comments you make about something. Detail to which, like you said, are data mining the detail of information and understanding they have of us, which is so far more detailed than what we even understand about ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I guarantee you that if you were to look into Facebook's data, or let's just use Mark Zuckerberg as the prime example. I guarantee you, Mark knows more about you than your husband knows about you. I mean, and vice versa, and everybody out there. The amount of information, it's not just, you know, hey, I had a great day today, you know, little status updates that you have or pictures, but the tracking your eyeballs, tracking your thumb strokes, tracking every single granular movement that you are taking within and without the app, it knows how you react to every individual aspect of their social media platforms.
Yeah.
How much time you're spending on a picture, whether or not you're zooming in on a picture on Instagram. Facebook knows that. And so that they're able to utilize that and monetize it, obviously, and then, you know, push that content more and more out to you, so you engage with it, which is how, obviously, they make their money.
Right, right. I mean, my view is, and I think this is why I focus so much on moms and families, because I feel like, and maybe this is sad, I don't know, you know, that so many of us that are in, well, you're in your 30s, I'm in my 40s, like, and up, you know, that even believing that, even, you know, there are people that will say, that's not true, you know, that would just flat, because, and my way of understanding that is, because it does seem flippant, unbelievable,
right,
like it, and really ridiculously scary. Or people, I don't care. Like, I used to say that, like, whatever, somebody wants to advertise boots because they see that I've been looking for boots, I don't care.
Sure.
But it's not just boots is the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I honestly used to say the same exact thing. And maybe to an extent, you know, I don't necessarily care how much Facebook knows about me, because I know where I stand on issues, and I know how I'm going to vote. I know, you know, how, where my morals lie. But what candidates in this particular example are doing, they're finding people who are sitting on the fence, and yeah, Facebook knows that. And so they're able to target fake news and real news and promote that out to them. So Republicans or Democrats can shift their or sway their opinion, which becomes extremely dangerous and becomes a world in which it becomes more and more dystopian every day.
Well, and that's why I hope that, like, what I was starting to say about, like, families and parents, that, you know, I have hope that this next generation, or people who are in college now, or people in high school now, who see, like, that they'll be able to, I don't know, maybe this is rose-colored glasses, but that they'll be able to see through these clouds more quickly and more easily, because those of us who didn't grow up with any smart sort of device, you know, it's, we just don't have an appreciation for how it works. And I always say, like one of the classes I'm putting together is a digital detox class for parents who want their kids to use less, you know, devices.
Yeah.
And so I think that, but I always wonder, like, if the kids that are growing up now really, really ingrained in their devices, I'll bet you when they have kids, at least a significant number of them are going to be so strict with their children about devices, because they know.
Yeah.
They know the little apps that are, the little app icons that look like a camera, but really those are hiding all of your secret photos that your parents have no clue, you know, all of those little things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think well, a major problem is we just don't know what technology is going to look like in the next 10 or 15 years. I have to imagine, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, newspaper became an issue, or radio was an issue, television was an issue, and just, there's always a new scapegoat to blame for the issues that we have. And, you know, I actually just spoke with Nir Eyal. He wrote Indistractable. And he goes on to talk about that kids' lives are structured so much nowadays that inmates have more freedom than children generally do between school and home life. And even as much as the media wants to contradict this, children, or we generally, are living in a safer nation or a safer world than we ever have been in the past.
Have you read Bold, or any of Diamantis Peter?
No, I have not.
My gosh. Well, and Abundance, he wrote. So he has a good TED talk called Abundance. I think that's the name of it. And his book Bold, I love. You're going to love it. And it's not a newer, but it's been around for a while. But he has a really cool TED talk that gives real stats behind, like, exactly what you're talking about, like, really what has happened with crime, or what has happened with poverty, or what has happened, right. And that these apocalyptic, now granted that was before this period of time, but these apocalyptic ideas that we have, like, oh, we're so much worse than we were, you know, 30 years ago, are just frankly not true. And he counters all of that with data. And it's really interesting. Like, I had all my kids watch it and know, like, look, it, you know, we're inundated with this, because as humans, like, I get it. We're wired to protect ourselves, and as a survival mechanism, like, notice when things are suspicious or not working or dangerous. And so we have to, like, in my opinion, you know, purposefully then stand back and say, okay, is that a true threat? If so, what am I going to do about it? If not, then I can move on with my life and focus on the things that are going well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As you're saying that, I thinking back to when I was a kid, and I was born in 85. I grew up in the 90s. And I just remember spending so much time with my friends out in the woods, building forts and just hanging out until dark. And I didn't have a cell phone back then. And the only way my parents could get a hold of me was just come yell at the edge of the woods, say, hey, come in for dinner. And they, you know, as far as I'm aware, they never worried about us being kidnapped or whatever. They may worry about us getting stung, which happened a lot, or you know, falling out of a treehouse, which has unfortunately happened a couple of times, but we all survived. We're all here. And so, yeah, I get the fear and the frustration that is bred because of, you know, this culture that we live in, the technology forward culture, where we are so inclined to believe everything we read on the internet. And that's scary.
Totally. Well, I'd love to get back into happiness.
Yes, please. Yeah.
You're going down the dark.
Yeah, we came this not really a tech show, but I geek out in that stuff sometimes.
Totally. Well, it's such it is relevant, obviously, because it's impacting people's mood and state of mind and emotional health in a huge way right now.
Right.
And I'm very, very affected by it. And things change with age too. I don't know if you'll find this, but I know me and I know some other women, particularly my age, because I just haven't had this conversation with men, but you know, stuff that I could handle watching, even, you know, just fictitious content, you know, books and movies, you know, 10, 20, 15 years ago, I cannot, not only I cannot handle it, but I actively choose not to handle it, you know, it's just not worth having any part of my brain attend to because it's just not serving me.
Yeah.
And so I think, so I back away and I've turned off notifications and I don't, you know, I'm on Facebook for business stuff, but I'm only on my own. I'm only putting content out there. And I think because of that, whatever the algorithm is, when I do go to my feed, it's all like roses and rainbows. People like it really cleaned out like any political hotness. So when I hear people saying like, oh my gosh, I had to get off Facebook. It just was so negative. And I'm like,
I get that. I was just having this conversation with somebody last week. I don't know at what point it was, probably sometime within deciding to start this podcast, but I will say when I was in my late teens, maybe my 20s, when I was starting to have full-time access to the internet, I don't know if I'd ever consider myself a troll, but I certainly wasn't a positive person online. And I had no issue engaging in arguments, which in retrospect is so bad for your mental health, you know, not just making somebody else feel bad, but making yourself feel bad. And so, like I said, I was having this conversation and I realized at some point I decided if I'm going to put anything on the internet, like anything outside of, you know, just basic job information, it's going to be positive. I may have these opinions that are bubbling around in my own mind, but I don't care about other people's opinions. I should not expect them to care about mine. So if I'm going to put something out there, you know, this podcast being the prime example, it's going to be positive. So far, and you know, I'm a small time podcast. You know, I'm not going to, you know, fluff the numbers or anything. So far, you know, that has worked out well. I've thankfully not gotten any bad feedback. Who knows if I have the opportunity to grow beyond that? I'm sure there may be exceptions to the rule. But my goal has been to put positivity out into the internet as often as possible, and that overflows into my own, you know, real life too.
Did you watch that Some Good News, the John Krasinski?
I have seen it. Yes. Yeah.
So good. I love it. And I agree. So since we're both like big book buffs, like what were some of your biggest like happiness, you know, philosophy type books that helped you shift?
Absolutely. So I will always give credit where credit is due. Ryan Holiday has a series of books. Ego is the Enemy is the middle of that series. It goes The Obstacle is the Way, which is basically about facing your obstacles in your life and making the most of them as opposed to shying away from them. Ego is the Enemy, obviously talking about your ego. Stillness is the Key. It's a phenomenal book. It's his final book in that series. And just talking about taking time to appreciate the stillness and being able to sit with our own thoughts. And for a good couple week period over the winter, I would just at lunchtime before the world went crazy, I would just walk outside, even when it's 30 degrees out, walk down to the quarry behind my apartment and just stand there for half an hour without my phone, without anything, and just stand there and appreciate, you know, the birds flying overhead, the undulations of the water, and just sit with myself. And that was phenomenal. And I really want to get back to that habit again. So anything by Ryan Holiday, especially those three books, is phenomenal for my own happiness.
That's awesome.
What about you?
So I loved 10% Happier.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
I like that. And that's great. I mean, first of all, he's got the best subtitle of any flipping book. It's like, what is it? Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics. It's short and like in concise, but so it's exactly what the book is for. It's for people who are either, you know, suspicious about, you know, like cautiously curious about.
In which he was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I did love that book, and I really didn't know a whole lot about Dan Harris prior to that. I heard him on a podcast a couple of times. I didn't know he had a breakdown on national television. I didn't know he was I think he was doing cocaine, right?
I don't even remember the details now because I read it a while ago. But yeah, he goes into his whole backstory life as a journalist and trauma but just the way he, you know, pulls you in, especially if you're somebody who, and I was already meditating at that time, but still I could appreciate like the value of it so much.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this was, I had heard of silent meditation retreats prior to reading that book, but I didn't know anything about them. And the amount of detail he goes into his experience on in that regard, it fascinated me, and it implored me to, I guess, think about going on one of my own. You know, I mentioned I went sober about a year ago. When I decided to do that, I put 10 big goals together and that I'd hope to accomplish within that year period. Well, COVID unfortunately had an effect on several of them, but silent meditation retreat was one of those goals. And I still fully intend to do that at some point in my life, but it was directly because of, you know, what he said in his book.
Are you thinking a 10-day? How many days?
10-day is the goal, or no, is the dream, I should say, is the dream. Yeah. I don't know about that. There are some retreats here in Columbus that I've kind of looked into just a little bit, 3 to 5 days. So we'll see, you know, once it's okay to breathe heavily around people without masks on, then I'll revisit that.
Right. No, that's fantastic. I know, I keep thinking, like, I think you and I have both read a lot of like Tim Ferriss and...
Yes, yeah.
Dave Asprey. Yeah.
No, I've not read. You said Dave Asprey?
Yeah. So Game Changers, it's similar. Well, actually, Headstrong is, but I don't know that it relates to happiness, but I think you would like it because he's kind of a biohacking, kind of how Tim gets into, you know, just digging into the brains of interesting, successful people in various, like so many different areas, right? And learning, you know, he's so good at asking the questions and pulling out like, you know, their philosophy and their tools and their, in the, even, I think one of his like books, right, is one of his questions is, what's the book that you gift most often?
Yes. Yeah.
I love that. And Dave Asprey is similarly obsessed with biohacking.
Okay.
Hacking himself. So he had a bunch of, you know, ailments. I'm, you know, cutting this way short, but, you know, and so he biohacked himself back to health and then was like, well, what happens to a healthy body and brain if I just keep going?
Right.
But so he talks about everything from, you know, mitochondrial health and like, whether it's like, you know, light, the effect of fluorescent lights, to food, to exercise, to meditation, to like every subject you can possibly imagine that could have, you know, any variables that
That's
affect
fantastic.
Your brain or your body. He has dug into it and then gone like 10 steps normal, like 10 steps further than any normal human.
That's amazing.
And he jokes about it too, because he married, I want to say she was an ER physician, but I think she's an OB, but he married a physician because like, he's probably come this close to killing himself like multiple times. but his books are really interesting from just a health perspective and noticing like how many things are in our environment that could be seeing us not only physically, but, you know, emotionally as well.
Absolutely. What are some of those things in your own life that you have come to discover? You know, you can talk about toxic relationships all day long, and you know which ones are toxic. But the things that we all accept as normal, when, you know, if you dig a little bit deeper into, you know, where they come from or how they are truly affecting our mind or our body, you know, those aren't always as apparent. Are there those things in your own life that you said, you know what, maybe let me reevaluate putting this into my body, and you've actually made that switch?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could think of, you mentioned toxic relationships.
Yeah.
First. So like when it comes to that, I use the term the vampire friends, like people who leave you feeling more depleted than previously. and so people know that, you generally know the people that you does not serve you, mind, body, soul to be around. But I think what's sometimes trickier is the people who like a drug or like alcohol, when you're around them, it's really fun and you're really excited and you're like, this is great. But then afterwards, you kind of have a hangover. You kind of have an emotional hangover. And so I always tell people, like, notice that. Like, notice the people in your life that, like, for the next hour or two or day or two after you've had an interaction with them, or you actually don't feel better. And maybe those are the people you should look into minimizing your time with and reaching more towards other people. And that has been huge for me, because then it seems to build momentum. So like I find one or two people that like just incredible, and like in the ways that they had the qualities that I was just really craving and didn't feel like I had in my life. And then, you know, two more would pop up, and then two more. And then like, now I'm drowning in the happiest way.
Yes.
These supportive, like, kind, compassionate, witty, fun, like humble, incredible people. And I'm like, where have all you guys been? But it's because I was paying attention to these people over here and trying to be like, why aren't you like this? You know? And the funny thing is I think they were like this to other people in their lives, but I was so busy focusing on what was lacking. But that's all I was seeing. Like, that's all I was perceiving. So that has been a big lesson for me, and of shifting instead of trying to change the people into what I thought they should be, really focusing on the people in my life who already were, you know, wonderful in the ways that I was hoping for, and really digging into that and attending to that. That was huge. And what else? So my husband has a lot of health issues. And so we've been together around 19, 20 years or something now. And so a lot of the things I've learned through him, because he's kind of a canary, we call it, you know, so things that might take 5 or 7 years for a, you know, immune healthy person to realize, oh, this is probably not good for me. You know, he can tell his body tells him right whether he likes it or not. So because of that, like, you know, we haven't used, you know, Wi-Fi in our house for 10 years. We hardline everything. We don't do devices with our kids. We, you know, they don't have smartphones or iPads, and we eat really healthy. We don't really eat, our kids don't really eat much gluten or much sugar or much processed foods and because I've seen the benefits of what happens when they don't, you know, do a lot of that, it's like, oh my gosh, like, whew, I feel like I, you know, I've saved myself a lot of potential frustration.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. I mean, I love hearing that. I don't know. Okay. First of all, well, you sent me a video of your kids playing music, which was awesome. Right. Yeah. The point I was trying to make is obviously the way you're raising them looks phenomenal. I mean, the way that, you have, I wouldn't even say tore them away from the devices, but given them an outlet that they can truly pursue and, you know, grow with. It's really fantastic. I have in recent years taken away a lot of those vices as well from sugar. I won't touch sugar. As I mentioned, alcohol, I do everything I can to give my body a fighting chance of, you know, being as successful in the arenas that I want. And that is cutting out a lot of that toxic, those toxic inputs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, and the other thing too, and this is what I like about Dave Asprey's book is because, you know, diets and all that stuff, like if you're doing it for reasons that are not really important to you,
right,
not only are you not going to follow through, but then you're going to feel crappy about yourself for not following through.
Absolutely.
So like really getting clear on what is most important to you and then finding a way, this is what I love, to link it to something that also has that secondary benefit is like the, and I feel like his book was like that because I've never eaten so healthy in my life as after I read his book, because it was about keeping your mitochondria healthy so your brain works well. And I was like, oh, that's the stuff I care about way more than like how I look in a bathing suit. Like,
absolutely.
Like to a certain degree, like I'm not willing to go, I'll go this far to be like, look healthy, but past that, I don't care. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
I do have to say, I have alcohol and a chocolate stash that I regularly like dip into. So I'm not trying to pretend at all, like especially during COVID, I have been.
That's okay.
I have my drink every afternoon.
So let me bring this conversation, you're the first one I've brought this conversation up with. I was running yesterday and I started to wonder if moderation truly exists. And people always say, oh, things are fine in moderation. For me, they're not. I don't believe in moderation. It's either all or nothing for me. Either I'm going to eat sugar or I'm not going to eat sugar. Either I'm going to drink or I'm not going to drink. I don't believe for myself, because I'm a population of one, that moderation is possible. And so I guess I'm going to bring you into the equation and I want you to answer that question for me as best as possible. I try to play devil's advocate with myself. Yeah. I said, maybe television, maybe I can moderate my television watching. And to an extent I do, but I can't tell you how many times I've sat down and I said, okay, watch one episode, and three later, I feel like an asshole. So, Amber, think critically of yourself. Are people capable of moderation?
So, I have to answer that a little bit more in depth. So, this is what I believe is, I think you have to be really honest with yourself, and it depends on the category. So, I know people who are all or nothing. Like they don't. They're either vegan. Or they eat everything and there's no rules, you know, or they don't drink at all, or they drink heavily often. They their religious beliefs, everything about them is fairly polarized, which is amazing, which is, this is not a bad or good or difficult, or, you know, it's just, but I think if they know that about themselves and they're really clear, you can use that to your benefit, you know,
because
when you make a decision about something, like you don't go back, you are all in. And just like there's people who know, like there's some people who know if I open a bag of chips, I will eat the whole flipping bag of chips. I can't do it. So for me, chocolate, this is the thing. I have moderation. I can do moderation with certain things, even within the chocolate category. So I buy dark chocolate, which is good, tastes like chocolate, but it's kind of crappy too, because it's so sweet. If I had a bunch of cheap grocery store chocolate,
right,
I would make myself sick.
Yeah.
Don't buy that. I buy the slightly crappy chocolate that's way healthier for you, but doesn't taste as good. And I can moderate with that.
Okay.
So for me, the answer is, you know yourself best, like speaking broadly to everybody, like you know what you can, what you need an all or nothing decision on, and what you know that you can do a little bit. And the other thing too is sometimes, especially with something like alcohol, is keep note if it shifts. Like, I used to be able to have half a glass of wine and leave the rest on the counter and not even care about it. But now I'm finishing the bottle, whether or not anybody's drinking it with me or in the room, you know, so notice that and be honest with yourself. And I think that's huge.
Honesty with ourselves. I think that's one of the most vital pieces of advice that we can give. I mean, we try to make ourselves sound so much better than anybody else. I'll give you a perfect example of this. When I tell somebody I don't drink. And I don't say that with any expectation for them to, you know, say, oh, that's so cool. Or why do I just say it because I don't want to drink. 9 times out of 10, somebody, when I will tell that to, will say, oh, I don't drink often. You know, I have a drink here and there. Like, I didn't ask you how much you drink. I don't care. But people want to sound better than they actually are. It's so important to be perfectly honest with yourself, because if you're not honest with yourself, you're not going to be honest with other people. And that becomes such a huge problem.
So I would argue, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Please, please.
Your perception of their reason, like why they're responding that way.
Please.
So my guess would be that they're responding that way because part of them is scared that they are drinking too much.
And
so the defensiveness that comes up is because I have this whenever I, and now the only reason I talk about it because I'm actually trying to provide help for people who do want to do less device for a long time. If it ever happened to come up in conversation with that my kids don't have, I immediately, like you said, same thing. People say, well, Martin, they only do it for educational purposes. And we only do weekends. And I was like, I'm not telling you not to do it. Like, I don't care. It just doesn't work for me. Like, it's a pain in the, like, I just don't want to deal with it. It makes my life easier. But man, and I realized for me, what I interpreted that is that they have some discomfort.
Yeah.
Because the judgment wasn't coming from me, so it's coming from themselves.
Yes.
And they're uncomfortable with how something is. And so that's when this like defensiveness can come up. And the other thing I would say about self-honesty is that it's the way I look at it is it is really in essence being kind to yourself because when you're not being honest with yourself, then you're putting you're bringing other people's opinions or judgments or expectations on you. And that's really like not kind to yourself.
Right.
Like the more you can be honest with yourself of like, this is going to work for me. That's not going to work for me. Like, I like this kind of stuff. I don't like, you know, I'm willing to try, but like, you know, being really honest with yourself, then I think it really reduces guilt. It reduces shame.
It reduces
frustration, aggravation. If you really, like, for instance, so one of my epiphany moments in life was I was meeting with this woman and I talk about this in my book, and she's like this life coach, right? She was a retired life coach. And so I went to talk to her and I'm sure you can relate. I've got my journals and my books and my this, and I got like all kinds of shit with me. I've got all this stuff with me, and I go in and I'm meeting her at her home. Right. So I put the stuff all around me. She takes one look at me. She was like, so you won't be needing any of that. And I was like, okay. But they're like, these are my protective things. What are you talking about? Put my book down, put my pen down. If I don't have a pen with me, I feel like I can't think or speak. And then the next thing she said was, are you a crier? Do you need some tissues? Like, yes. Oh my gosh, what's happening? What did I get myself into? And she looks at me and she says, Amber, what do you want? Long pause. And I was so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable because I knew she didn't mean, what are my plans? What do I want to accomplish in 2020? I could have given her that list all day, right?
Right.
And I was just squirming and squirming, and she would just wait impatiently for my answer. And, you know, when I took a few deep breaths, and I don't know how long it took, it felt like an eternity. But I just, my eyes filled up with tears. This is the first question, first word I answer. And I was like, peace. Come on, peace.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, oh, where do I begin with that? Because the other stuff I knew how to get. I knew how to tackle that. That felt so much more doable. I could give you a list of stuff I want to accomplish all day.
Right.
But how do I achieve peace? What? I don't even know what that means, let alone what does that look like, let alone how do I get there?
Now, if you don't mind me digging in, did you mean peace internally, like mental peace, or are you talking about that peace, world peace? See, those are.
I think I meant in my home, like calm.
Yeah.
I needed. I think internally for sure, but also like immediately surrounding.
Yeah.
I mean, this is when I had 4 kids under 7 at the time. So anybody looking at me from the outside would be like, no shit, you want peace. Of course. Like what? But to me, it was like, okay. That's good to know. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Then at least I could point all my time and energy and resource, not all, but as much as I could give at that time, into figuring out what that meant for me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I know we're coming up on an hour, and there's one before we get, I know we've both got some ways that we like to close our podcast. So I do want to do that. But, you know, one thing that you said at the beginning that I didn't get to tie in naturally is that you can't do the work for other people. And that's extremely important, especially when it comes to, I guess the subject of most of this conversation is that I'm very careful in my language about the podcast, when I talk about happiness, and I don't want to ever market myself as somebody that if you listen to this podcast, you're going to be happy. That's bullshit. I would never, ever say that. You know, whatever I do is try to inspire people, is to try and get people to question, you know, their own motivations and whether or not they're being honest with themselves, because you can talk circles around people about why they should do this or that, but unless they truly want to change, it's just not going to happen. So along those lines, I'm just curious if you have any insight or words of wisdom that you've experienced in your own personal life, because I have to imagine that you've never been able to say, hey, you need to do this. And sorry, my Google's talking to me, that you need to go out and, you know, make this change right now, or else your life's going to go down the shitter. That's just not how the world works.
Right. And I think might be projecting here, but I think it's especially frustrating for people who really, really, really want to help.
Yeah. Yes, I know.
I know how to help you. You know, it's just, so it's excruciating, especially when it's with somebody, close to you or you care about that's even more painful. And that was one of the reasons why I stopped doing one-on-one therapy as a therapist, because I would think about this person's problems nonstop, come up with all those ideas, and they'd be so frustrated when I didn't see them following through with things that they, you know, said they wanted to do. And so for me, what I did was first pick a platform where I could be further away, just physically separate myself, say, I still want to throw out as much good content and helpful and inspirational or funny or whatever I think might serve.
Yeah.
And then just lay it on the table, and then it's up to you to pick it up or not. But if I can figure out to say it and provide it in a way that is, you know, loving and non-judgmental and accepting, I think people are more likely to pick it up.
Yeah.
Try it on for size. So I try to change my approach, not change, but be cognizant of my approach.
Absolutely.
So I think that's helpful. And then, but when it comes to people who are close to you, that's a whole nother ball of wax. And the only thing, the advice I would give to people and that I've used myself is, instead of focusing on what you think they should do differently, you can focus on just the, I know there's like the touch point between you and them. So if your interaction is leading you to think, oh my God, like they're so sad because every time I talk to them, they're complaining about their relationship or they're complaining about their weight. And so instead of visualizing or trying to help them fix that problem, what maybe you can focus on is the time that touch point is happening. How do you want that to look different? Yeah. Do you want it to be filled more with hope and joy and fun and laughter, or, you know, this perseverating on the problem? And once I started focusing on that, like where I was directly involved, things started shifting really quickly with the people in my life. And I was like, all right, they're probably still having all these problems, but my touch point of interaction with them looks completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if you've experienced this as well as, you know, if, for example, somebody's always talking about their poor relationship, making them cognizant of the fact that they're always talking about it, because a lot of times people don't realize this, the certain things that they do over and over again. It just, it's, it becomes second nature, and it becomes their normal, you know, method of operation. So just making them aware of it a lot of times can help them make that shift too. At least that's what I've experienced.
How do you do that without like offending them?
I maybe say, you know, Hey, listen, I noticed that you like to talk about your relationship a lot. Is everything okay? Just ask, putting yourself in a position that you are somebody who can help them, as opposed to making it seem like you're criticizing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
I guess directly relatable to that, I got that advice to a certain extent from Indistractable, Nir's book. People who tend to be on their phones all the time, even when it's considered rude, making them cognizant of it by saying, hey, listen, I noticed you've been on your phone all night. Is everything okay? You're not telling them to put their phone away. You're asking them, say, hey, is everything okay? You're making them aware that they have been on their phone for an uncomfortably long amount of time.
Yeah. I like it. I think there's some people I know that are artful at that, or that even can make a joke about it. I think it's genius if you can do that in a way that's not, you know, that's not, that doesn't come off as judgmental or like a jerk, you know, that can also be like you. So use your strength too. Like if you're somebody that's like, dude, you know, you're always on your phone. Like, do you need rehab for this? Or, you know, like some people can joke about it and get the message, and where you don't come off like a jerk. I don't know. That's a tricky art. But the other thing too, I think on your own, you can do is remember and remind yourself all the things you do love about that person and their personality, and really focus on like, oh my gosh, when they do put down that cell phone, like they are so funny, or they really give me great business insights, and like start doing some like positive affirmations about that. And I swear it's like magic for me. That's changed my interaction with people a lot.
That's great. That's awesome. All right. Well, Amber, I appreciate this. This has been a lot of fun.
Should we do my closing stuff?
Yeah, go for it. You can go
all
first.
Right. So I always like to close with like two, if you can think of, but if you just have one, we can do that. What is one of your go-to easy, like in the moment practices that you use if you're just having a lot of anxiety or overwhelm or frustration? Sure. Like if there's a big emotional moment that you're just like needing to center yourself from, kind of what are your go-to practices?
You know, a lot of times I will catch myself feeling anxious. I think that's probably the most common uncomfortable feeling that I'll have. And I don't, on the surface, I don't know why. And so I will stop. I will think, I will say, okay, listen, Trey, what do you have to be anxious about right now? What, you know, is there a project that you're in the middle of and you need to get done? What right now is causing you that anxiety? And you put this perfectly the other day when we were talking about this. You remove the judgment from that. You say, okay, you know, I have time to finish this. I don't need to be anxious about it right now. And that helps relieve a lot of that anxiety, or those negative feelings. It's not perfect. It doesn't work 100% of the time, 100% well, but it does enough to remove that immediate threat of something bad is happening or is going to happen. So just reflecting on what the emotion is and removing the negative stigma from it.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I almost feel like it's bringing it, you know, up into the higher parts of your brain that are, you know, because you're analyzing it now instead of just feeling it, you know, it's less visceral reaction.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Have you heard of what are the cross-lateral movements?
No.
So this is one of the things I've been doing lately. And so it's basically any exercise movements that get your right and left brain communicating more readily, which apparently is linked to, you know, calming your nervous system.
Right.
And So it could be something as simple as like, kind of like when you do the itsy bitsy spider with your thumb and finger. Or you can even like, I'll even just like cross your hands across your shoulders, or, and they say, you know, the breathing where you breathe in and out through one side of your nose and then you breathe in and out through, have you ever seen this? Some meditations do that.
Okay. Okay.
And apparently that's supposed to have the same effect as well. Awesome. So you can use big, you know, and that's why like running and, you know, anything where your arms and legs are moving, independently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and somebody, what's her name? Oh my gosh. I'll think of it in a second, but she has one where you hit one palm with your fist or open like this. And apparently there's a, you know, that pressure point right there. So hit that. And you do it six times and then six times. And the funky thing about six times is it's not like if you're a musician or anything, like doing four or doing eights is pretty, you can kind of stop thinking about it. So this is something that's supposed to take your concentration. And so you do that six and six. And then if you can do that fairly easily, then start to do deep breathing with it. And then if you can breathe and do six, and you add a mantra, like, I am so calm, I'm chilling out, whatever your mantra is.
I like it.
And those work, like, especially for those moments, if I have like 5 minutes to, like, I'm supposed to do a podcast and super annoying happens. And I just come and it's like the exact, I get upset. Then I have to start from this zone, like, are you kidding me? And so that, and I swear it works. It's amazing.
That's incredible. I will try that and I will report back to you on how it works out. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Yeah, no, you're not off the hook. Okay.
All right.
So we're both bibliophiles. We love books. I need more bookshelves. So my question to you, because I really feel like this is a superpower, and I ask this very selfishly so I can go and read it. What has been the most influential or life-changing book in your entire life, or that you've read in the recent past, or in any time in your past, and why has it changed or influenced your life so much?
So for me, reluctantly, it is, I shouldn't say that, that's mean, but then I'm going to give it a lot of props right now. So it's called Code of the Extraordinary Mind.
Okay.
Like, just if I mapped out on paper, you know, the biggest impact I've had personally from any book I've read, and like you, like I chug down books pretty quick. And I don't know about you, but like if a book does not catch me, it's out. Like I don't have time to waste. I won't get through it just to get through it. But Code of the Extraordinary Mind, and in the book, the author refers to a lot of other thought leaders and authors. And so part of the reason why it was such an impactful book for me was that it introduced me to a whole world of other books that also impacted me in a big way.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah, I will certainly check that out. And is that the book that you mentioned a couple of days ago that we were talking about? Okay. All right. Yeah. It sounded like that made big changes in your life. And it certainly piqued my interest. So I will check it out.
You were saying something about that you get these names of books from your guests, read them, and then do a follow-up.
Yes. Yes. That. Yeah, absolutely. We are certainly going to do that. So as soon as I read that, we'll do a follow-up to this conversation.
That's perfect.
Cool.
It's on. And I've got, which one should I start with? Holiday. Ego is the way, or obstacle?
If you're willing to dedicate three more books to your reading list, I would just go in order. Obstacle is the way. Ego is the enemy. Stillness is the key.
All right.
Deal?
Deal.
All right. Cool. Awesome, Amber. Thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll talk soon.
Talk soon.
One more time, a huge, huge thank you goes out to Amber for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate you, Amber. I appreciate all the positivity you're bringing to this world. And I highly encourage anybody who's listening to follow Amber. I know we didn't really get into it at the end of the episode there. So all of her social and contact links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to find her on Facebook, it's facebook.com/stretchmarks. On Instagram, she's official Amber Trueblood, and her website is ambertrueblood.com. Thank you all so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you as well. I appreciate you taking the time to listen, and I appreciate you taking the time to challenge yourself to do better. If you find value in this podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That helps me grow. And if you'd like to get more Mosaic Life podcast content, you can follow the podcast on Instagram at One Mosaic Life. On Facebook, just search for The Mosaic Life Podcast. And if you want to reach out to the podcast directly, you can email me at onemosaiclife@gmail.com. Thank you all again so much. And until next time, take care, do better, and be well.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save.